and dumb, but what they don't know is where I've been and who I am, all the ways I've grown.
This isn't self-help, it's a full-on rebirth. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, the podcast for women who are done playing small, staying silent, or living by rules they never wrote. I'm Amy Polacco, journalist, divorce and life coach, and freedom warrior, and I'm here to help you take your power back. Because the system isn't going to save us. We need to save ourselves. So grab your coffee, your courage, and maybe a few curse words. It's time to wake up. Welcome, everybody, to Girl Wake Up. You know, for years, we were told that the future was female, that women were breaking glass ceilings and rewriting the rules. But if you look around right now, you don't need me to tell you, many women are wondering, did we mistake progress for permanence? And we're seeing rights being rolled back, narratives rewritten, and movements that stop evolving can lose their power. So today, we're asking a big question. What does feminism look like in this moment we're in? And what do we as women need to do next? There is no one better to talk about this than Marcy Bianco. Welcome. She's joining us from Boston.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be here.
I want to tell everybody about what you do. I mean, you teach at many schools in Boston. You're doing a course at Harvard based on your book, which is behind you this summer. I shared her perspective in the Guardian article I wrote recently about how more women are making FU rings after their divorce, where she said so perfectly, right, Marcy, that those aren't FUs against specific men, but against a system that confines women to gender roles. Right.
Yes, and absolutely.
Right. So she is a PhD, a writer, editor, lecturer, cultural critic, and author of Breaking Free, The Lie of Equality, and The Feminist Fight for Freedom. Her opinion pieces and cultural and literary critiques have been featured everywhere from Vanity Fair and CNN to independent platforms like Dame and The Advocate, in addition to many academic journals and publications. So thank you so much for being here. It's quite a time we're living in, right, Marcy?
Quite a time. But that's why I feel like what we're discussing today is so relevant, not only to our political lives, but to our personal lives. That's what I really wanted to do with this book is, you know, the feminist mantra, the personal is political. It feels so distant when we think about equal rights, like so out of our hands. But if we think about feminism in terms of freedom, that's really in our hands. I mean, that's what you are doing in your own work, right? As a leader in the space, helping divorced women move forward in their lives, right? How do you claim your freedom, right? At certain points in your life. So I'm super jazzed for our conversation today.
I think a lot of women are confused right now and they need your take on this and your guidance. So I want to start with, you know, why does it feel like on one hand, more women are empowered than ever before, but also we're under attack possibly more than ever before? How would you address that?
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of chuckled when you said empowered, because empowered is often, I find, a rhetorical word used for women who don't have power and who are kind of given the shine of being empowered within what I call a patriarchal system or institution. But really, it's our institutions as they exist, right? In the sense that they were, think about in the United States alone, so let's keep the context to America. Our institutions were written by a very specific group of landowning, right? Yeah. Wealthy white men for the perpetuation of their wealth, right? Yeah. And so we have these systems in place. Systems are inherently conservative because they want to preserve themselves.
Right.
And so what you were saying about, you know, rights being rolled back, I feel like that is almost a natural consequence of trying to find, carve out, create equality in laws and in policies in these institutions, because whatever equality ends up looking like will be filtered through those institutions and it will be profoundly, I feel like, still limiting, and really equality in theory never manifests in practice in such a way. So either rights are being rolled back, or when there's an equal policy being put in place, it never really materializes in the way we think it will. And that's because these institutions are operating in very specific ways. So I'm more invested in thinking about how we can truly find ourselves, our power, and our freedom through how we live daily and in our daily lives. Because, you know, especially today, given that we do, it is a fascist society that we are in.
Yes.
It just is by definition.
Right. This isn't an opinion. This is empirical.
Yeah. You can look at actual scholarship on definitions of fascism. That's the kind of world that we are living in, and specifically in this country. And so I always ask, what is the equality that we seek, or what do we actually expect equality to look like in these institutions that are being run in this certain way? What, like, is that even good enough? Like, how does that actually provide the care that we want? The, you know, thinking about minimum wage, do we really want equal minimum wage? Like, is that what we're seeking? And so, you know, we have, like you were mentioning, we've created this rhetoric, the glass ceiling, the glass cliff, the glass floor, to kind of talk about like this weird breaking through to achieve this equality. But for me, it just always, since a very young age, I was like, this isn't good enough for not just women, but for anyone, because I don't think anyone really feels like they are able to live their lives in a very fulfilling, careful, deliberate way. I think everyone, regardless of their gender, feels overworked, exploited, exhausted, right? They have families that they can't spend time with. That's what we're trying to achieve parity with. I mean, like, that's not good enough for any of us.
Well, more and more, we're seeing these comparisons with, you know, the quality of life in Europe, for example, in different countries and people flocking there. But I want to ask you, you know, many women these days are disillusioned with this term feminism. Like, where is feminism today? So how would you describe where it is today? And are there things, you know, feminism needs to confront about itself right now? Do you see it morphing? Like, what's your view on it?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. And I do say in my book that it took me a very long time for myself to identify as a feminist. So I was like, I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and there was such a profound backlash to feminism and how it was portrayed in the media. I was like, I am the last thing from being a feminist. But I had very good mentors in graduate school, and some of them helped me realize that, you know, what I actually was seeking, my own independence, my own agency, my own power, not having to be dependent out of necessity or expectation or tradition on men, but to live with them, live mutually with them. That's how I began to think about feminism. And you know, I think feminism is really, really stuck because we've been wedded to equality. So that's why, you know, you see these, to me, I try not to roll my eyes too much, but, you know, the UN released that report saying gender equality is 300 years away. And, you know, we're in America, we're still fighting for the Equal Rights Amendment for more than 100 years. And I'm just, you know, over and over again, we see the same stories being repeated in the media. And so I thought, what is this equality mindset that is really hemmed in our thinking and the expanse of our imagination about who we can be and who we can become. And just, you know, in a country that should care for its citizens, why are we expecting why do we want the bare minimum, mm-hmm. bare minimum? Why is that good enough for us? So equality, in my estimation, is really stuck in this equality mindset of seeking, of having such a fidelity and commitment to equality, which really results in a zero-sum thinking that both villainizes men by situating them as the opposite to us, right? And also centers men in the feminist project. But it's also just a very particular group of men, because
right.
many feminists have already said, like bell hooks, for example, not all men are equal. So what men are, you know, women trying to be equal to? Like, who are we trying to be equal to when we talk about equality? Because not all men are treated equally in our society. I thought there has to be another way rather than structurally through this gender binary, right, that equality feminism relies on. There has
what
to
would
be,
you suggest?
Yes, there has to be a feminism that doesn't villainize or situate men as the opposite, mm-hmm. but which presents us all as being kind of working towards something together. And for me, my vision, my idea is in freedom. Mm-hmm. Because the fact is, freedom is something that we can practice, that we can live and experience. Like, you know, something I say to my, one question I ask my students is, you know, who woke up today feeling equal? No one raises their hand, because like equality is not a feeling, but you absolutely can feel free, and you can feel different forms of freedom. Something I'm very interested in right now is privacy,
right?
Because privacy is a form of freedom.
How would you define freedom for someone who's listening and thinks, how do you describe that?
Right. So freedom in my definition is the self-creation and world building, the continuous self-creation and world building based in accountability and care. It's understanding that all of our freedoms are mutually interconnected with each other, right? Like, I am not free unless you are free, meaning that we are all, you were born into the world, I was born into the world in different situations, right? Different backgrounds, different classes, different, you know, like we all have our differences. We all have our freedoms are very, very situated. Even being human, like sometimes right. I tell the joke, like to my students, if I have to teach Milton, I'm just, you know, if I have to teach Paradise Lost, I'm like, I'm a human. I just can't jump out of this 10-story window and fly away because I hate Paradise Lost, right? Okay. We have very specific limitations on our lives. But how we, Simone de Beauvoir said, transcend, how we transcend the limits of our freedom is for the freedom of other people, even from birth. I didn't give birth to myself. Did you give birth to you?
Right.
So we need other people to be free, to learn from, to grow from, to mentor us, to educate us, to feed us, to nurture us, to love us. We need other
people. I'm with you 100%.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm with you 100%. I'm just wondering, we're suffering through an extreme lack of empathy in our country right now, right? So.
Yes.
Those of us who would describe ourselves as empaths, we do feel when we see someone else's freedom being taken away or someone in worse circumstances than us. But the sad reality is we have a whole host of our population who appears to not care. How do you address that, Marcy? Like, how do we achieve freedom despite that?
So freedom begins on the individual level. It really does begin individually. And what this demands is that I know exactly what you're saying, because oftentimes I get frustrated by the seeming complacency and complicity of people. I also have to keep in mind that all of us have different lives and we can take different risks. And all of us have different comfort levels with risks. So me being me, I'm a loudmouth, and my values are, I'm Italian. Like, I'm just, that's who I am.
I'm half Italian. So
I know, like,
count?
So you
does
understand. Yeah, it totally counts. I live my values, which for me is living my integrity, and central to my values are transparency, and accountability. So if I see any kind of injustice, if I see any kind of form, any kind of discrimination, any kind of constraint of freedom, I feel it is incumbent upon myself to speak out. Have I lost jobs over doing so? Absolutely. Absolutely, I have. I know not everyone is willing to take that risk or can take that risk. I've had these discussions with people I love, friends of mine, and we'll have lunches and I'll say, why didn't you speak up or speak out? And they have to explain to me. Like, they are fully cognizant of why they don't speak out, but there are also other ways to contribute to people being able to find freedom, cultivate freedom. Because, you know, even in life and death situations, really, in those situations where you feel like you have no choice, not making a choice is still a choice. Mm-hmm. There is an amount of calculated decision-making of a consciousness in which you decide, what am I going to do next? Even if, you know, I have this sliver of space to act from within. And I know, you know, your audience too, speaking to people thinking about divorce or people in difficult relationships or violent situations, they might feel they have no choice because it is a life or death situation.
Right, right. And I think that going back to what you were saying about our institutions and our system is that, you know, I co-authored this book about our family court system and women's stories. And many of them feel like, wow, the system is not even going to protect me. So how can I leave the abuser? You know, and I see how the news cycle and certain people coming into power, I'll say, affects women's view of their own ability to leave the situation.
It's
so interesting because it's a message sent to them that if people can reach some of the highest levels in our country, and they remind me of my partner, maybe I can't leave. It's futile. And that really breaks my heart.
I know, obviously. Because there's no hope. Right. There's the sign of there being no hope. And I do believe that since 2016, our country decided to green light putting literally someone who has gone through the court system, who has been accused and convicted of more than 40 felonies, right, of assault. We have determined that this person and the people in his circle should take care of us, which is, I believe, what government should do. which, again, for women in these precarious situations, what is the outlet? What is the hope? I mean, coincidentally, I think your book actually is an example of how to find that freedom, because those women, in telling their stories, are helping other women, are providing guideposts. And you and your co-author have given this book to the world. One thing that we can do to help us make sense of our own situation is to hear the stories of other women going through the same thing
and figuring out. Absolutely. And that's why I started the podcast Girl Wake Up, right? Is because
I mean, that's exactly it.
Right. Because is that you, I think we're in this time where the systems are not going to save us, ladies. Let's look to each other.
No. And the systems want us to feel isolated and alone. Mm-hmm. That is precisely how abusers operate. Isolation. And so that is what our system in toto is really doing. How do we do that? We have to turn toward each other, realize that whether it's someone trying to figure out how to escape from a violent domestic relationship to, you know, I have dear friends in Minneapolis trying to coordinate with other parents about which playgrounds their kids can play on to avoid ice patrols and tear gas.
Right. Marcy, is this in a way the new feminism, right?
Yes.
Maybe it's less of this huge movement you see on TV, and it's more on the local level, on the grassroots level, on the person to person level, where we're saying we don't need to have a big flashy protest per se, though they're still good. No. They're still good. Yes. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But, you know, we can do this in a different way. And you helping one woman or a small group of women is still helping the movement at
large. That's huge. It's the butterfly effect on a personal level.
Right.
Because here's what you've been saying, right? It's the fact that our systems are not going to free us. Ever, any kind of freedom fighter has said, no one's going to hand your freedom to you. You right. have to claim it. What we need to do, because our society has intentionally pitted women against women.
Yep.
Intentionally yep. so, because if we had each other's backs, we would be able to help each other, support each other, uplift each other, save each other, protect each other. And so this kind of work, I mean, Governor Tim Walz was talking about this on a podcast the other day about how, you know, why what happened in Minneapolis succeeded is because residents were helping other residents.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
what we need to do. So my understanding of feminism is not waiting for men or the people in power to bestow equality onto us. Right. We're not waiting for that. We're claiming our freedom ourselves. It's a freedom-based feminism.
Right. And we see this, Marcy, right, with more women choosing to stay single and not get
Absolutely.
Married. I mean, you had so many great insights from my Guardian article on the FU rings, right? But, but you had so many things I couldn't fit in there about, you know, how women are rejecting these old roles. And they're saying, yeah. you know what? I have a peaceful, happy, free life on my own.
Right.
Maybe it's with my friends. Maybe I have a partner, but I'm choosing not to get married. Maybe it's with my cats. And I always joke they can call us the crazy cat ladies.
I'm fine with that too.
Come home.
Yeah.
We're totally
yeah.
fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that demonization of the feminist, right?
Right. Right. And that's exactly it. Because part of my understanding of freedom and what I, you know, I in my book, I talk about different freedom practices. And one is the practice of self-creation. And I call it self-creation because it's the idea of self-determination, determining your life. But I really love the meaning and the power of aesthetics. So how we design our lives, right? The meaning we give to our lives socially, aesthetically, that's, I think, very valuable. I mean, it's me being that's a
right.
writer and an artist at heart, right? How we design our lives gives us meaning. And so for me, this self-creation is about conscientiously and carefully designing your life, knowing that we live in the world with other people, right? And we have to respect mm-hmm. their dignity. But it's understanding that we can design our lives centering care and accountability, right? Taking ownership of what we do and knowing that we are responsible for our choices that we make and the actions that we take. But having, you know, tossing out the scripts that I think, again, in this equality mindset, right, have really fixed into us, because equality, as it's written and implemented, it's an artifice. It's not organic to our, like, again, organity or equality is not an organic thing to us. It's right. something that's created, fabricated within very patriarchal institutions. We need to throw out these scripts and figure out what works for us.
So if a woman's listening and she's yeah. thinking, I want to get more involved, I want
yes.
to be part of this, what should she do?
Right. So this is exactly what I document in my book. It's a very, and I go very, very slowly, bit by bit, because it actually is asking for a huge mindset change and a cultural change.
Okay.
So the first thing you need to do, I say, free your mind, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking about the En Vogue song, because I'm older.
I think I'm in your age group, so yeah.
But it's really having this, you know, what older generations of feminists called a critical consciousness. But
right.
thinking about, okay, who am I without, I call it the man in the mirror, right? The man I might be kind of dressing myself for, the man I might be envisioning walking mm-hmm. down the aisle with. Who am I without the father figure?
Mm-hmm.
And women have to do that, because we have grown up in this society with those constraints. We have been conditioned
right, in our
either.
Cultural,
yes.
You know, our cultural world reinforces this, right?
Yes.
With Disney movies and romances and rom-coms and
reality
the woman
shows,
achieves
love
happiness,
is blind.
Yeah,
yes.
with a man,
right?
Constantly.
So I actually think this is the free your mind part. Is really the foundation to this movement toward freedom, because once you figure out, okay, if I'm thinking outside of this man in the mirror, thinking outside of mm-hmm. this gender binary structure that puts men at the center of my worldview, and I put myself there for a minute. What is it that I want? What is it that I value? What is it that makes me happy? What does it make me feel like I'm making meaning in my life? And that, for me is through teaching, through being in conversation with other people, through mentoring younger people. Mm-hmm. That gives me meaning in my life.
Isn't this part of, Marcy, this term we're hearing more and more about decentering men?
Oh my God, absolutely. And that's why I really do, you know, I love this trend of women taking time and not just falling into this deeply well-worn traditional path of you must get married. Well, why must they? Right. Like, why must I get married?
You know, I can work now. I can actually have a bank account without his permission.
And this is the thing. This is not to say that I'm in no way saying not to get married. I think that's oftentimes people go to this either or thinking, zero sum thinking.
It's not black and white.
That's not it at all. But it's saying, if you choose to get married, why do you want to get married? What are the reasons behind getting married? Do you understand how marriage operates legally, institutionally in this country? Like, what does that mean for you? Rather than just thinking, this is how I have to live, right? This is how I must live.
And I would add in, Marcy, what are his views of marriage? Because as a divorce coach, I hear on a daily basis that, you know, some of the women I'm coaching are in abusive relationships. Others, I had one yesterday who said, you know, he's not a terrible guy. He's just trying to shove me into the role of the 1950s housewife. And when I sent him a little excerpt from that saying, ha ha, this is what you want, he said, it sounds pretty darn good to me, right? So, I mean, you cannot romanticize that your partner is someone they're not. You cannot change him, right?
Right. And, you know, it's so funny. You mentioned rom-coms, but you notice how rom-coms always end when they decide to get together, but they never really follow through. That's the thing with your partner. And this is why so much of my focus, I talk about the what else to equality. Freedom is really my vision, but the what else to equality is mutuality. Understanding that we are all different, but we have to recognize and respect our mutual differences and figure out, okay, this guy I'm with, what does he want in his life? And of course, you know, the big challenge of making a lifelong commitment is that people grow and change. That is the biggest, biggest challenge, because who you are today is going to be different from who you are 10 years from now.
Right.
And
right.
with your man as well. It really, really will be. So do you think you two have similar values such that you can grow and change together?
Right. And it affects your children, too. I hear from so many women. I have a daughter and I don't want her to think that's what a marriage is. You know, often women I'm dealing with will mistakenly think, oh, I've got to stay for the kids. Wait till they get to college. You've got to leave for the kids also because you don't want them obviously repeating those relationship patterns and also feeling like that's going to be their role someday, that they're looking for a husband just like that, and they're diminished their own potential, right?
Yeah. And this is part of the conscientious self-creation that I'm talking about, because when women decide to stay because of the children, right, that's also a social script, right? This weird kind of manosphere thinking that children need like both men and, you know, male and female parents in their lives, which, you know, I people can have multiple parental figures and turn out really spectacularly.
Well, yes, you know that single parents get the, you know, that negative connotation or that myth that all the children are going to be troubled and horrible because they're from a broken home.
And that personally, I mean, I begged my mom to get a divorce.
Right.
I begged because, and this is what I was saying, like, if women choose to stay, they are daily, their dailiness of living is teaching their children what is okay and what is not okay, right? Where their boundaries are, their boundaries might not even exist. That is actually informing and educating a child more so than what you verbally might say to them once a month.
This was the first thing, and we got off on this one, but you were going to say a second thing from your book, right?
So after you do, and this is always, you know, it's not just a one and done thing. Yeah. It's not like a quality where it's like, oh, we have equal rights.
Check the box.
Check, you know, and then of course we see them being rolled back. the second thing is freeing your body. This is what I was talking about with self-creation. It's thinking about life doesn't have to be circumscribed to scripts. Equality is very limiting. When you say you want what men have, do we want more? Like, you know, I always roll my eyes at this equal pay thing because I'm like, this is what we're fighting for? This kind of like absolute exhaustion, 16-hour days, not even making enough money to pay our rent. Like this,
right.
This,
these like, days,
come on,
yes.
Ladies. Right? I mean, like, come on. We all deserve so much more. And we are all in this together. So working to free your body, right? Understanding and experiencing freedom through your creative expression, through how, you know, you designed your home and your life. That to me is the next step from body, right? From mind to body. And then my third step is movement. And I really talk about, again, the focus is on deliberate, careful, right? Not careless, but careful movements. Because for me, it's your movement. And this is what I've learned from my philosophical mentors. Movement creates space, not vice versa. And what I mean by that is take your home. You build or someone builds this structure for you to live in. Is it a home yet? No, it's a structure. How does it become a home? By how you That's move so through it, by how you design it, by the rituals, right? The nightly family dinners, right? The weekend movies, the movement of the space, the rituals, the love, the expression. That's what makes a space.
I love that because as I'm helping women get divorced and sometimes they're moving from a beautiful, huge house, perhaps, or maybe even just middle of the road house, and they have to go to a small apartment. I say to them, home is where you are. Home is where you are with your children. Like you're going to create your own traditions. Like you may be sad about the dissolution of the family. That's mainly what they're grappling with. It's not the, I'm madly in love with my partner still. It's that, oh, I thought I was going to have this Norman Rockwell family.
Of course.
And then I say, you know what? Your kids are going to feel this peace. And so often my clients' kids come to them and say, I love our new place. And it's like this tiny little, you know, little house or little apartment or whatever it is.
Right.
The kids don't care about that.
Because they feel that energy. They feel the energy of their
of peace.
It's, I mean, I know that going through that as a child, right? A child of divorce myself, right? It's just that peace, that calm energy changed everything. And it was so worth it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'm going to recommend everyone listening, get Marcy's book. It's back there behind her, right? I want to move on to this segment we have here, Marcy, called Truth or Trap. And it's where I throw out a statement to our guests about the topic we're discussing. And you tell me, is it truth? Is it a trap? Is it somewhere in between? Your take. So here it is for you. you ready? If feminism were truly working, women wouldn't still be fighting the same battles. What do you think of that when people say that?
If they understand feminism as equality feminism, it's absolutely true.
Right.
This is what I say in my book.
Right.
Everything is cyclical because we somehow think an artificial law is going to stop gender violence in the home, which is a culturally conditioned thing. Culture mindsets do not change by there being a law in place.
Yeah, right.
Police are not. I mean, for example, you know, you can strap a camera onto a policeman. That doesn't mean that the culture of violence in policing is going to change. I mean, these are band-aids. I absolutely. So if your listener, right, believes that feminism is equality feminism, 100%, 10-10, agree with you.
Right. So yes, I do have a listener letter from a woman. Ooh. I'm just going to read this to you. She says, hi, Amy and Marcy. I'm a 35-year-old single woman and lately have started noticing something strange when I'm dating. When I mention anything about feminism, even casually, some men immediately get defensive or say they're not into politics. A few have even told me feminism has gone too far. It makes me wonder, should women even bring up feminism while dating anymore? Or is that exactly the problem that we're being pressured to stay quiet about it?
Well, it seems like in that situation, dear listener, you are definitely being pressured to stay quiet.
Right.
I love that.
Maybe not a second date.
No, I mean, so here's my thing. Like, I understand the need for litmus tests in the dating world and to gauge your dates. Feelings about feminism. One thing that I would always make sure to do would be to define it because again, I think how men come to understand feminism is through the idea of equality feminism, the structure that pits men against women. And that's not my understanding of feminism at all. So if I was on a date with this guy, I would say, okay, hold up. I'm not talking about us being in opposition to each other. I'm talking about us trying to build a world together and being free, both of us, of the norms and strictures that say we have to be a certain way because we're men and women. You can be the man that you want to be. I can be the woman that I want to be, right? Like, we can be in this together and make our own way together. So I would make sure I always want to define my terms, especially, like, you know, because feminism is such a loaded term. So,
and they're using it, they're weaponizing it.
They're weaponizing
it on the other side. I love that about your outlook, is that it's about men and women cooperating together.
Yes.
And I'm curious, just last question for you before we wrap up, is like, do you think, loaded question, like, do you think enough good men are speaking up right now? You know, we've got the Epstein files going on. Wow. We have all of these transgressions. And I mean, let's face it, a lot of these men are dads, and they have sisters and they have mothers. Like, I would think that you would watch all this and think, oh my gosh, that could have been my daughter picked up on the street and taken into one of these trafficking rings. Like, do you think they're speaking up enough?
This is hard because I don't want it to come across as an indictment of all men. I almost feel like it's most people are not speaking up because there's such a culture of violence that people are so afraid, and authoritarianism, that people are afraid to speak up about anything. I think it's a lot of women too. And it just makes me sad because we have this binary structure that is dividing us. I don't think men seem largely to understand that violence against women is also affecting them, even if they're not, you know, even if it's not their daughter, but it's reinforcing these stereotypes about men, certain patterns of violence. It's affecting all of us. And the only way that it can end is for all of us to get involved. And, you know, frankly, if men listen to other men more than they listen to women, there'd be a sea change if men spoke up more and they would understand that it affects all of us, you know?
That's a great place to end. I think you've given everyone a lot of inspiration and tools and a great take on what's going on right now, because I think so many feel so disillusioned, you know?
Yeah.
How can people find you, Marcy? Where can they get your book?
Oh, that's sweet. So really anywhere books are sold. just Breaking Free, The Lie of Equality and the Feminist Fight for Freedom. My website, marcybianco.com. I'm also active on Instagram and LinkedIn. But again, like, to me, it's men and women. Like, we men and women, we are in this together. That is my big definition and my reframing of feminism, because the last thing we need to do is fight against each other. Like, that's just absurd. We need to fight these violent norms together.
I agree with you 100%. And I have a 17-year-old son, you know, so I'm raising to believe that too. So,
and I mentioned this. Before that, you know, most of the parents who came to my book talks when I was on tour were parents of teenage boys, because their sons were learning that feminism means hating men or telling men to wait their turn. Not my feminism, not the definition I'm putting out there for people. So men, take heart. We are in this together. I love you too.
Great. That's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Marcy. Thanks for listening to Girl Wake Up. I'm your host, Amy Polacco. If this episode woke something up in you, don't let it fade. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it, leave a review, and keep this conversation going. Remember, no one's coming to save you. So she did.